Hello, and welcome to Contact High. Last Friday night, we gathered for Kabbalat Shabbat for the first time since High Holidays, and were packed to the gills in what was our most well-attended service since the pandemic. We see, hear, and feel so many of you reaching out to find community, a space to cry and grieve and pray, and last Friday night, we did just that. After a service whose liturgy we adapted throughout to pray for the safe release of hostages still held in Gaza, and for the safety of all who call Israel, Gaza, and the West Bank their home, Rabbi Stephen gave a sermon vulnerably sharing his own perspective on this moment.
Welcome, everybody. Good Shabbos. Shabbat Shalom. I want to invite you, if you have not yet since coming in here tonight, to breathe in and then exhale. And then do it another 7 times, one for every day of the week. Maybe the longest week of many of our lives that started last week on Shabbat and continued day by painful day until this moment. And you felt the need to come here tonight to be around other Jewish people, other people who feel for Jewish people, to be supported, to be held, to exhale, maybe to cry, to sing, to pray. And so some of our service tonight is going to be exactly the same as any Friday night service would be. And the beginning of it, Kabbalat Shabbat, is going to be different. Kabbalat Shabbat is just a collection of psalms to help us transition from the week into Shabbat. And I sense that the transition this week is an even harder transition than it usually is, moving from the chaos and frenzy of the week into a space of dreaming, a space of possibility, a space of healing. It almost feels cruel to ask us to make this transition. And yet here we are, and I sense that we deeply, desperately need it.
Maybe seated. One of the greatest blessings of my life is getting to be a rabbi in this community. Partially because I feel that it is rare as a leader in a community to be able to speak your heart and mind and feel safe. And so I'm going to admit to all of you that speaking about Israel in any context makes me a little nervous. And so what I'm going to ask from you is to remember that I am also a human who is navigating what seems to be an impossible situation to the best of my ability. So if you hear something that makes you go, oh, I'm not going to listen anymore, I ask you to keep listening. And if the whole thing is something you don't want to hear, then luckily I have a very large coffee budget. And I would love to take you out for coffee and talk to you. You can also tell me if you like it too. That's also okay. So the rabbis have a debate. If you had to pick one verse from the entire Torah, which would you choose? Rabbi Akiva goes first, Ve'ahavta l're'echa kamocha, love your neighbor as yourself. This is the greatest principle of the Torah. In fact, when Hillel, one of the preeminent sages of our tradition, is asked to teach the entire Torah while standing on one foot, he paraphrases this exact verse by saying, "What is hateful to you, do not do to your neighbor. The rest is simply commentary." And this is a powerful and provocative verse, a command that not only calls us into loving relationship with the people we live near, despite our differences and disagreements, but also one that asks us to think seriously about who is, or really if anyone is not, our neighbor. in an increasingly globalized world. But then Shimon ben Azai offers a different verse. Zeh Sefer Toldot Adam. This is the record of those descended from Adam, the first human. This verse from the first chapters of Genesis, he says, is an even greater principle of the Torah because it sets aside the arguments about who is and who is not our neighbor to point to our belief. And what we now know is a fact of science, that all people come from a common source. And if this is true, if we are all indeed descended from Adam HaRishon, that first human, then each of us has inherited the legacy of being created in the divine image, an equally audacious claim derived from our Torah reading this week from Bereshit. I know this is Torah I come back to a lot. If you've ever heard a sermon that I've given before, you've probably heard me quote this verse. And if I had been asked to participate in that debate, I probably would have chosen Vayivra Elohim et ha'adam b'tzalmo. B'tzelem Elohim bara oto. And God created the first human in the divine image. In the divine image, God created them. But the reason that I keep circling back to this verse, the reason that I feel it is so important, is that it is an incredible assertion of human dignity and worth. Among all of the claims that our creation myth makes about the world around us, this one is one of the few that is not empirically observable. We know that Genesis is not an accurate reflection of history, but it does actually quite a good job conveying the order of the natural world, the celestial bodies that illuminate day and night, the separation of land and sea, even the order in which living organisms evolved from fish to reptile to bird to mammal. But what cannot be seen or held is the statement that human life is good, in fact, very good, and human life is sacred. This must be believed rather than observed. Rabbi Yitz Greenberg once taught that it is the mission of the Jewish people to have the vision and the commitment to move the world from how it is to how it should be. And as a foundational belief of our tradition, the inherent dignity of each and every person is something that we as Jews are tasked with recognizing and protecting, because it doesn't just happen. This week, the world has been a poor reflection of our tradition's claim of humanity's goodness and worth. What many of us would have once called unimaginable, at least since the dark days of the Holocaust, is now very much our reality. And I wish it was otherwise. And these numbers change every day, but when I last looked, at least over 1,200 Israelis have been massacred. And more than 150 Jews have been taken hostage and brought over the border into Gaza, including at least two local Jewish women from Evanston. I think there'll be a vigil for them on Sunday. Including a recent graduate from Deerfield High School. Including family members and friends in this very community of people in this room right now. The scenes of terror and brutality are so hard to witness, and because our community is so interconnected, because people that we as Jews think of as our neighbor live in places around the world, and especially Israel, I know that each of us is only 1 or 2 degrees of separation at most from someone who is dead or someone who is missing. I'm heartbroken. And I am scared, and I am angry, and I am overwhelmed by the prospect of what this means for us, for our physical well-being, as well as our spiritual well-being. And I imagine that many of you are, if not all of you are too. And take a breath. I'll take a breath. So I want to talk to you about where our tradition might give us guidance in this terrible moment. But before I do, because of all the noise that is happening around this tragedy and our tendency when we are on guard to read between the lines, and I am very guilty of this too, I feel the need to say this, that we at Mishkan unequivocally condemn the acts of terror committed by Hamas. There is no justification for harming or killing civilians, especially children. None. This statement, of course, extends to all human beings, and also as Jews, the pain of other Jews speaks to us in a particular way, punctured as it is by our shared history of loss and how excruciatingly aware of how small a people we really are. It is impossible to not see myself, my friends and loved ones, each of you, reflected in the faces of the missing or the dead. These are our people. These are our people connected to us through blood and culture and belief and language and land. Yes, and land. Because Israel, as messy and as complicated as this relationship may be, is our home. For thousands of years, even as we have been displaced and dispossessed, Israel has been the homeland of the Jewish people and the sacred center of our tradition. The direction we face, we just faced it a couple minutes ago, in both times of celebration and in times of mourning. And of course, Jews living in Israel today have parents or grandparents that come from somewhere else, because for most of our history, we had no choice but to be somewhere else. We are European and Indian and Ethiopian and, yes, Arab, because century after century, we have been driven from our homeland at the point of a sword or a gun. When looking at the creation myth in the opening verses in Genesis, this week's parasha, the commentator Rashi poses the question, why does our sacred text, the sacred text of the Jewish people, begin with the formation of the entire world? Why not start the story a few chapters later with Abraham and Sarah, the first Jews? He writes that this is to remind us that the world belongs to God, not to people, and that God chose the Jewish people to settle in the land of Israel and call it home. Lest anyone claim that we stole it, lest anyone doubt the fact that we belong there, the Jewish people have a right to exist and to be safe in the land of Israel. And from the beginning, from the very beginning, we have never been the sole inhabitants of the promised land. When Abraham and Sarah arrive there, they find other families who also call that place home. Families that would eventually grow into tribes and nations who, like us, have nurtured a relationship to that land across generations. The Palestinians are one of these people. They also have the right to exist and to be safe in the land of Israel, which most of them call Palestine. We have been trying to figure out how to live side by side with our neighbors in this land since we first stepped foot into it. Sometimes we've done this well. There are actually moments in the Torah where we do this very well, and sometimes we have not. And sometimes the failure is our fault, and sometimes it's theirs, but truthfully, most of the time, it is all of the above. There is plenty of blame historically and in the present moment to go around for how we arrived at that awful moment that took Israelis by surprise this past Shabbat. That context matters, as difficult as it may be to acknowledge in this moment. I'm going to say some hard words. The occupation and the current right-wing Israeli government, driven as it is by a messianic ethno-nationalist vision for the future, tearing Israel apart from the inside and making it vulnerable to outside attack, are part of the story that we cannot leave out when conducting an honest analysis of how we got here. But no amount of context, no amount of context excuses the acts of abject terrorism and brutality that Hamas has committed this week. They must be condemned by anyone with a heart. They must be condemned, which means all of us. The pursuit of liberation at the cost of others' lives is at best lacking imagination for how these aims might be achieved, and at worst, what happens when people allow the breadth of their compassion to be circumscribed by hate. And the same must be said about maintaining the safety of our people. War demands that we choose sides. It is humankind at its most polarized, us versus them, the lives of our people or the lives of theirs. But this is not the only way. It cannot be the only way. The mission of the Jewish people is to have the vision and the commitment to move the world from how it is to how it should be, from the proposed necessity of armed conflict to the incredible possibility, as impossible as it may seem, of peace. To this end, Rabbi Sharon Brous wrote this week, "I am asking us to dare to hold the humanity and the heartache, the need for security of the Jewish people, while also holding the humanity, the dignity, the need for justice of the Palestinian people. For too long, these two have been set up as incompatible, but this is a false binary." This is a false binary. As much as those promoting rebellion or retribution may abide by it, one that is invalidated in the very opening chapters of the Torah, Ze Sefer Toldot Adam. This is the record of those descended from Adam, the first human. That is all of us. All of us. Our humanity is one and the same. Our liberation and our safety and our well-being must be bound up with one another, and especially with those who are our neighbors, with those who also call our home their home. So I've made the mistake, as I imagine many of you have, of spending too much time on social media this week. My boyfriend has regularly come over to see what I'm fixated on, and if I'm doom scrolling through people's stories on Instagram, he puts me on a phone ban until I promise to look at something else. As someone who exists both inside and outside the Jewish community, my feed has been a mixture of pro-Israel and pro-Palestine posts. Different in presentation, but the message is largely the same. See our pain, and not theirs. How dare you try to hold their hardship alongside ours? Look at our dead. Look at what we have lost. There is no equivalency here. Our inherited suffering and the heartbreak we hold right now is worse. You either stand for Palestinian liberation or you don't. You either support the right of Jews to be safe or you don't. Why is this polarization so tempting? I like to think that my friends and the folks that I choose to follow online are rational, smart people. The kind who think critically to avoid sharing misinformation, who seek out different perspectives to temper and refine their own, who have what our tradition calls a heart of many rooms, able to hold justice and mercy and grief and compassion together because life is complicated and human beings are very, very complex. But then if it was my mother who had been taken hostage, if my brother had been killed dancing at a music festival or my sister called to fight at the Gaza border, would I also want to raise it all to the ground? Would I also choose to pick up the weapons of violence in the name of self-defense and justice? Holding complexity and nuance is never easy, even if we know that both we and the world cannot be broken down to simple binaries. How much more difficult, how much more painfully difficult is this task when our hearts have been torn open by the kind of tragedy that we as Jews thought was a relic of history? I'm going to be honest with you. There is very little that any of us can do to change the course of what the coming weeks will bring. Unless, of course, someone has a direct line to Bibi's office. But I'm assuming that's none of us. And honestly, I don't even think it would make much of a difference. And as hopeless as this moment might feel, we need to be humble about how much power we actually have. But we do have some power. We do have some power. We have the power to be the guardians of our own moral compass, As overwhelming as our pain is, we cannot allow it to dull our compassion. Our tradition calls us to be capacious in our empathy, to hold the humanity, as Rabbi Sharon Brous challenged us, of both Palestinian and Jew, and refuse the narrative that we have to choose between our well-being and theirs. I know this isn't easy, especially now, but when we say that the purpose of our spiritual tradition is to comfort the afflicted and afflict the comfortable, sometimes afflicting the comfortable looks like pushing back against the easy response, the tempting response, even if it's the most understandable response. Grief can lead us to believe that we must build higher walls to protect ourselves and those we love, that we must seek out and destroy the cause of our pain. But grief can also reach across the lines that divide us. Heartbreak is a universal and deeply human experience. It is so much more powerful than the ideologies that separate humanity into us and into them. And this is our other power, to connect with one another, to connect with one another. Amidst the statement making and lack of statement making and the gifs and memes and posts and stories and op-eds and analyses and blame and debate focused on this tragedy, I noticed a quieter, more powerful conversation happening. People checking in on one another. My Jewish friends calling me to say, hey, how are you? Are your people okay? My non-Jewish friends texting, I don't know what to say. This is all so hard for me to take in, and I can't imagine your experience, but in whatever way I can be, I'm here for you. And actually, probably the one that stands out the most is a friend of mine who's Palestinian American, who hasn't been able to see his family in Gaza for nearly a decade, who is scared for what the future holds for them and for his people, reaching out to me to say, I am hurting so much right now, and you must be hurting so much too. It is an incredibly human ability to allow our brokenness to become the source of our empathy. Allowing the parts of ourselves that resonate with and understand the pain or loss of another to guide how we treat them. How incredible, though. What a profound act of love. You don't have to agree with their beliefs, or the posts they share, or the rallies they attend. You don't have to agree with what they think the solution to this crisis is, or how we might come about to a lasting and hopefully peaceful resolution to this moment. But that's the thing about our humanity, about our shared lineage that allows each of us to trace our origins back to Adam HaRishon. When we create space to recognize and honor the divine image in one another, we find that this sacred imprint transcends across the divisions of family or tribe or nation, and it is in this place of holy connection and commonality that we might actually find a pathway to a better future for us all. I really hope this will be the case. But for now, all we can do is to do what we can, to calibrate and be guided by our moral compass, to be gentle with each other, to be gentle with ourselves, to reach out to those we know, and to pray for those we don't know, caught in the crosshairs of this conflict. So I want to pray for some folks, and I hope you'll join me standing. I want to pray for the safe return of all those who are being held captive, including and especially our elderly and our children. I want to pray that the families of those who have died find comfort in time. I want to pray for the soldiers and the officers of the IDF, not only for their safety, but for the moral clarity as they are forced to make difficult choices in the weeks ahead. I want to pray for the people of Gaza, not only for their safety, but for freedom from all forms of oppression. I want to pray for the people who have so little hope, who hold so much brokenness that they are driven to violence. I pray that their hearts may be transformed, so that the work of their hands might be healing instead of hurting. I want to pray that Israeli and Palestinian leaders and their allies have the will to seek a peace that lifts up and values the lives of all people who call that land home. And I want to pray for us, that we might actually be the people who see the world as it is become the world as it should be. When swords are beaten to plowshares and guns into pruning hooks, and our grief transformed into joy.
You've been listening to Contact Chai, a production of Mishkan Chicago. If you were inspired or informed by this episode, please leave us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts so that others can encounter our work. And if you appreciate what Mishkan is doing, I invite you to join as a builder or make a donation on our website at mishkanchicago.org. Shabbat Shalom.